Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this, my friends, is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsack.
And I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and I am happy to be here in my home talking to Ken and all of you.
We are here indeed, 2 years and running almost via Zencastr, and you know, we're still, we got the rhythms down, Joseph. We don't step on each other too much.
I don't think so. It's the sweet sounds of broadcasting in sweatpants, I think, is working well.
We don't even turn on the cameras. We just jump right in like we're Anakin balancing on a droid on Mustafar.
Exactly. You roll out of bed in sweatpants, bedhead, and talk Star Wars. It's pretty great.
We're going to talk a lot of news. We got some cues. Those are the questions. A lot of stuff to get to this week. As always with news, we sometimes play catch up and some stories drop as we're recording and little tiny things in the casting news. Man, I thought we were going to have a little quiet time. Every time I think that, it's a big week. Before we get to all that, though, let's just remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, we'll have our 4center recommends, an audiobook we think you should try out on us. But as always, Joseph, that is not all for the offers.
No, there's so much more. That's what Luke Skywalker was saying in the Last Jedi teaser trailer. There's so many more offers. Inside Editions is a publisher of a ton of great Star Wars books. They also have a bunch of other wonderful pop culture books about other topics as well as Star Wars. They are offering 35% off across their website if you use this special link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35. This week, we are continuing to recommend the Inside Editions book, Secrets of the Sith. Do you have a person in your family, maybe a child, maybe an adult, who just loves Sheev Palpatine? This is the book for you. Again, you can use this link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35.
Use it, my friends. Use it. Do it, as Palpatine would say. We always like to catch up with some life adventures or Star Wars adventures. You know, it's getting that busy time here as we race towards 2031. The years and days are going by, but just if that was your life, and did Star Wars find its way into it?
Oh, Star Wars always finds a way to mash up another genre phrase. It's been a busy time. A lot of stress in good ways, trying to keep up with everything. But this weekend, my wife and I went out of town from L.A. We stayed at this lovely little inn that is right on the beach, just a little bit outside of L.A., and mostly just watched the ocean. And even that is a Star Wars adventure. Yeah. Because my mind drifts to Star Wars. We watched the entire sunset. And, you know, because of all the deep thoughts that we get to discuss here on Force Center, I think a lot about the lessons that I've learned from Star Wars about, you know, just the cycle of life, taking a deep breath and trying to be in the moment. And I think of all that when I watch the ocean. And then I also think of, you know, the High Republic, where some Jedi see the Force as an ocean. So I had some nice, just relaxing and deep philosophical Star Wars moments. But then I went to an antique store and looked at Star Wars things that I could buy with money, which is another big part of my Star Wars love.
Toys or money?
Toys. I mean, money to me, money, that's just Star Wars coupons, right? That's the way that's I saw it as a child. Right. And now I see it as like rent coupons as well as Star Wars toys.
Yeah. Yeah. Love that.
But so I went to this antique store. I've been there before, and I wanted to just kind of check in on what's there. And the thing that I really focused on this time, they had many copies of it. So I contained myself and I didn't buy it. Maybe next time. But they have a bunch of toys and, you know, ornaments. They have, Ken, some Revenge of the Sith era, Revenge of the Sith focused Valentine's Day cards.
What?
It's the kind of stuff that, like, you know, if I just had to bet, does this exist? I'd be like, well, yeah.
Yeah. But
I'm sure I probably picked it up and looked at it and laughed about it at a Target in 2005. But it's just a hell of a thing to see in an antique store that is, you know, so far now in the distant past. And it's so funny. Like I could share every single card, but the one that really cracked me up, because one of these boxes was displayed so I could see the front and the back in the glass case, you know, to protect this antique. General Grievous's card says, "It's what's on the inside that counts." And you just imagine him saying that to, "It's what's on the inside that counts, Valentine." And then, like, just hacking up just huge amounts of phlegm, right?
So someone was having a great day at work and was like, "F this job, I'm coming up with this one."
"General Kenobi, it's what's on the inside that counts, Valentine." It's so funny to me.
That's hilarious. That's great.
Yeah. So yeah. That was my Star Wars adventure, from depth to Valentine's Day cards.
I love that. I love that indeed. No Valentine cards for me quite yet, but did get to enjoy a great experience on a podcast. An episode's going to be coming out soon. It's called the How Do You Figure podcast. And someone just, it's all about toys and collectibles and figures, hosted by Blake Schultz and Justin Donaldson. And I hadn't heard it before, and everything was one thing. Just got tagged on a thread. They just done an episode on the Phantom Menace figures with a pro wrestler, a local LA based pro wrestler named Johnny Yuma. And someone just kind of tagged me, "Wrestling and Star Wars figures. Ken must need to hear about this." So I ended up got connected with the guys. And turns out we all live within like a 5-minute radius of each other, which is crazy. And one of us, we actually kind of worked together for a little bit of Screen Junkies. We just didn't know each other. Weird. Great time. A lot of fun reflecting on Star Wars toys. We're focusing on the Micro Collection line from 82. That's going to come out. I'll let you all know about it. But it's just fun, because they're not, it's not a Star Wars focused podcast. per se, but man, the power of Star Wars toys and the connection that it helps just breed immediately in people who have never met, right? Just the shared experiences. And Justin's kind of maybe more in our age group, like a little younger, more special edition prequel era generation fan. But, you know, just I pulled out the actual micro collection figures I still have. And it's like, you know, we're immediately talking. We're immediately connected and immediately have things to share about Star Wars. And I think that's the power of Star Wars toys, talking about what the key parts of the fandom there.
Yeah, no, I love all of the discussion that there's been around toys in the last couple years. Not that they haven't always been popular, but I think just a real appreciation that they are symbols of these larger ideas of the individual characters of the story of Star Wars, but then also of the life experience of, did you have this one? Did you covet this one? Did you even know this one existed? They're little conversation starters, aren't they?
Enough to be on a podcast. Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of the many things I love about them. I'm glad that the toys can continue to bring people together.
Yeah, absolutely they can. So look for that. A lot of fun. And, you know, Justin and I were very familiar with the line. Blake had just kind of only heard about it in lore, you know, and there's a revelation that happens on the show. I won't spoil it. That's actually pretty funny that he couldn't believe what we were telling him about these micro collection figures. So look for that, but always fun. And then, yeah, for me, just in life, you know, I'm having one of those I need to hear the words of Qui-Gon again and again. Your focus determines your reality. I'm trying to do some things both with productivity, scheduling. Met with a friend of mine, just like, I need to organize my life and career a little bit better. So working on that. And that is about being present and how your focus literally can determine your reality and what's coming. So I've been living with the words of Qui-Gon a lot this weekend, which again shows you that Phantom Menace has some staying power, even for a old generation trilogy fan like me who scoffed at it in 99. I didn't know that what I was scoffing at would help me 20 plus years later.
Yeah, that's great when a scoff becomes a help.
Mm-hmm. We all need helpful scoffs. No, that's not right. That's not right. So that's Star Wars and Life Adventures. Joseph, if you're ready, we're going to dive into a thick bubble of Star Wars news.
This is all news that I'm excited to talk about. Even the challenging stuff I'm excited for today. I guess Qui-Gon's been whispering in my ear.
Yeah, we're going to need Qui-Gon to whisper in the ear because I was challenged with some of the news earlier in the week. And it's okay. It's okay to be challenged, get a little grumpy, face some truths, but also accept other, I don't know, just get to the news because I don't want to get, I'm going to get myself pretty grumpy. It's not fair to the listeners. First story is actually really cool. Really positive. This is from Deadline First. They reported the exclusive that ahead of the March 2022 production date of Ahsoka, Natasha Liu Bordizzo is set to play Sabine Wren. Bordizzo is an Australian-born actor, most known for her role in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Sword of Destiny. Some details about her. She has a black belt in Taekwondo, has trained in Kenpo Karate and Wudang Sword Fighting. She knows how to fight, or maybe with karate, some of it is how not to fight, which is kind of Jedi-like, I think. So, Joseph, that's kind of the headlines. One of the things that, of course, as we always like to point out, not officially confirmed from StarWars.com, and there's a lot of rumors and stuff flying around about the Ahsoka casting. We know we got the, you know, Hayden Christensen back as Anakin Vader, just back. Let's just say that. Others, again, others rumored. We'll maybe mention them, but We're treating it all as elevated rumors, at least right now. But this one seems pretty good coming from Deadline. What do you think about Natasha Liu Bordizzo, Joseph?
Well, first, compliments on the turn of phrase, elevated rumor. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because so much news lately is a report, a rumor, but not a confirmation or a press release from, you know, actual Lucasfilm. So I think we're going to have to start having our different kind of levels, right? Is this a four-alarm rumor? Is this an elevated rumor?
Levels of truth.
A rumor drenched in shadow. This is really exciting. I think the most exciting part of it to me is just Sabine Wren in live action, right? It's something that has been rumored, discussed, hoped for. So having a little bit more possible confirmation, not actual confirmation, possible confirmation is really great. I have not watched any of the things that this particular performer is in, so I don't have any strong opinions about the performer or kind of guesses. About that, the one thing that I do think is interesting, you highlighted obviously the underwent all of this intensive training specifically to be in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon sort of destiny, according to her Wikipedia. Wikipedia. She doesn't have a Wikipedia page yet, but she will. A Wikipedia page. But then also I'm seeing that she was in The Greatest Showman, which I have not seen, but I am very aware of it. It was this kind of fascinatingly slow hit, right? That doesn't happen as often, but it had a fine box office and then just stayed and stayed and stayed.
Right.
But the thing that's interesting about that to me is this is yet more casting for a Disney Plus show, a Star Wars show that is bringing in a performer that a lot of people might really know from a different pocket of entertainment, right? I mean, if you're a hardcore musical fan, you're interested in The Greatest Showman, right? It is one of the highest grossing, you know, live action musicals of all time. So that's interesting to me. If that is going to continue to be a highlight of the casting philosophy to bring in performers that, of course, got to be a good match for the character, got to be a great actor, but are kind of bringing with them like a little bit of a different fan group to maybe check this out.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. Especially bringing in the musical thing. I'm waiting for Sabine to sing. No, but I mean, obviously they're going to try to bring in the best person. I think there's immediately seeing the pictures and the headshots going around, and I too haven't seen Greatest Showman, not too familiar with her work. And I know a lot of people in our Force Center Discord were really happy to see her cast based on their knowledge of her previous work. But just the visual image, I'm like, oh, hey, that's Sabine.
Yeah, no, there's some great Sabine energy.
And that's not the be-all end-all of casting choices, of course. But yeah, there's just something great about this training she has and what she can be able to do. And yes, there's stunt performers that do most of the work, but just having someone be able to kind of live in this potential action as someone who may or may not still have the Darksaber or have it again or had it definitely in the past, we know. So what kind of action are we going to get in the series always comes to mind. And the pulling from different genres is an interesting take too. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the question of what if she can wield a weapon in this show, if Sabine is going to wield a weapon, you know, that's very fascinating getting into all the timeline stuff and perhaps overlap with the Mandalorian. My only other thought about the actual casting as opposed to Sabine being in the show is I'm always going to feel a little bit bad for the voice actors, but that's one of those things I need to let go because, you know, the world is what it is. I'm not in these rooms. I'm not making these decisions. I think Tia Sarkar, who voiced Sabine, is great actor. You know, I think she's great in The Good Place. I haven't seen a lot of her other work, but she's a great live action performer as well. But I think I just need to accept that Katie Sackhoff being Bo-Katan in live action is going to be the exception, not the rule.
Yeah, 100%, right? It's engineered a little different of let's design this character around this actor. In fact, we just covered her debut on Clone Wars, on Clone Wars Report, and how Filoni was like, hey, let's do this. Let's bring her in. And with you on it, you know, the Ashley Eckstein stuff around the Rosario Dawson casting, now this, I'm not surprised. I think we talked about it before. Tia Sarkar is a talent performer, as is Ashley Eckstein, but is the lay of the land, and this does kind of make sense. I'm even scrolling through, as we're talking, I'm scrolling through her IMDb. She was in Guns Akimbo with Daniel Radcliffe, and she's got some multicolored kind of hair going. And there's a shot, I was like, I would have just submitted this and said, I can be Sabine, yes? Like, it's just, it just looks like Sabine. Craziness. So, and that's always going to be it. But you're right. Like Good Jedi, you might have to let some of that casting stuff go.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about Sabine coming to live action. This is as close to a confirmation as we've got yet. We know that a lot of rumors, a lot of thoughts about what's going to be in Ahsoka. We don't know a lot of official things quite yet, but this, as we said, we're playing that. We're playing this one as elevated rumors, as I said, but official enough from Deadline. Joseph, Sabine, live action, Search for Ezra, Thrawn, Ahsoka. What do you got? Where are you at with it right now? Because I know we've had this conversation before, and we'll probably have it again when the more things are confirmed.
I'm thrilled. I'm excited. I know that some fans have a little bit of consternation of like, why is the Ahsoka show the live action Rebels sequel, right? And I totally understand having those concerns and those questions. I just have a lot of trust that this is going to be constructed where this is Ahsoka's journey, and then these other characters will be treated with great respect because, you know, Filoni has every reason to respect these characters. that he created, co-created, co-wrote. I'm not for myself too worried about that. I think there's even the possibility that if this is Ahsoka's journey, but we are learning a lot about who Ahsoka is and what she's going through based on this search for Ezra, that focus is still going to be Ahsoka as the main character, the same way The Mandalorian is really successful in my opinion about being about Din Djarin.
Yeah.
But then it's setting these other characters up to go off and have other adventures. So, you know, I don't need everything to be a spinoff.
right.
But it's also exciting to me of, well, once we get Sabine established in live action, where else could we go? The things I'm excited about is I'm very excited to see exactly what her feelings are after the war, right? Because this is most likely going to be happening then. Her kind of relationship or feelings for Ezra, in particular, her feelings about Mandalore of whatever exactly has happened to Mandalore during the Galactic Civil War, which I think we know a lot of bad stuff happened. The Mandalorian show has made it clear that some people think the planet is unlivable. Other people think that's a rumor, that it's not actually literally as destroyed. But the fact that, you know, Sabine is going to be active in this time period, live action, when she has at one point handled the Darksaber. And basically the cliffhanger of The Mandalorian season two is Din's got the Darksaber and he doesn't want it, but Bo-Katan does. And knowing that these shows are perhaps going to come together, right? To some big event. Sabine seems really important Sabine has this relationship with Ahsoka and Ezra with this story over here, but she has just as big of a relationship with what's going on in The Mandalorian season three.
She really does. Really, really has a place at that table. You're absolutely right. And the crossover event that was, I won't say promised, but mentioned on the investor day a year ago now. Man, there's no time these days. I think you're right. And look, I've said before, and I could still get behind the idea of, man, it would have been great to have the Rebels animated team, both cast and creators, come back and finish what they had started. Though I've considered Rebels pretty finished as a good show, as a great ending, and did what it needed to do. But with Filoni and these characters that you're right, he creates and he really wants to continue the stories and find the ways to do it. I really do trust that it will be done right. And I got to say, at this point, this is why I always ask about where you at right now with it. I'm more excited than I would even have thought I was just to see it play out. And one of the things you're touching on, if you get these characters in the live action and it can work and you can make it work, without a doubt, there is some constraints in some fans on the animated programs. I have a lot of diehard Star Wars friends of mine who are like, yeah, I don't really watch the cartoons, right? And you can have that old debate of animated versus cartoon that we've been fighting our whole life. but I get it. I do get it. And if Filoni's, I'm not saying this is the sole reason, but like, hey, this opportunity now exists because of Disney Plus. I could take these characters, break them through that animation wall, present them to more Star Wars fans who maybe would be more open to it. Then who knows? Remember a couple years ago, it was like, give us an Ahsoka movie. There was no chance in hell that I would have thought they would have done a Ahsoka movie, instead of Solo or Kenobi, any of this stuff that was rumored, because it was still an animated character. Now, the possibility exists. You want to talk about the future of the franchise? You could do stuff. It could get beyond Disney Plus if it works in live action and if these characters get new fans behind them and new fans discover them. By new fans, I mean old fans, quite frankly. Or like, it's just, I heard about this cartoon. So I'm interested in that. I'm interested in that. And you get a good performer like this booked into the role that you can build things around. That, not just beyond just this crossover event potential, it could go anywhere in the Star Wars galaxy.
Yeah, absolutely. And you get those great things on Disney Plus that are like, hey, here are the essential Sabine episodes, right?
Yeah.
And get it's helpful for Star Wars to encourage people to enjoy what already exists, like you're saying, which I think is great. I also just think I'm excited to see Sabine and Ahsoka team up, not just because they're two characters I like, you know, and Ahsoka is still pretty new to live action and Sabine brand new to live action. But this time period after the Galactic Civil War is really interesting to me because they are both from kind of shattered communities.
Yeah.
And if they're looking for Ezra, to me, this is a story about rebuilding connection, right? About like what's next. And I think it's so important, such a foundation building that Ahsoka does seem like she's going through a hard time in her one episode in The Mandalorian, that she is moving forward. She has a mission, but there's sadness about everything that's been lost. There's sadness about Anakin. And that just makes me really hopeful that this Ahsoka show could be, you know, a really uplifting Star Wars story of we've lost a lot. We've got this relief that the Empire fell, you know, Palpatine is gone. But both Ahsoka and Sabine going, looking around and going, okay, what's left? Now we're off in the galaxy to pick up the pieces, to literally journey out into the unknown and reconnect with our lost loved one. But within that, just the much larger, like the Jedi are gone, Mandalore is shattered. You know, Sabine's Rebels, you know, family has kind of split and gone their own ways.
Yeah.
What is, you know, it just sounds so possibly uplifting to have this story of rebuilding and finding the new community, the new normal.
Yeah, that new normal thing's powerful. That use of that phrase, a shattered community, very powerful. And I'd love to see that at play all around this New Republic era, right? I don't know why this made me think of it, like Princess Bride, Mandy Patinkin, as you know, finally gets revenge, and it's like, what do you do now? You spent your whole life trying to get revenge on the six-figure man. It happens, and it's still there. And there's some trauma processing themes at play. There's like you said, the identity, the new normal, and that's some of the stuff that's definitely at play in Mando. And I'm fascinated by that beyond just the continuing of that rebel story and finding Ezra and Purgles and Thrawn and all that kind of stuff. I'm really cool with just discovering that on a plot point idea. But I'm fascinated by, you know, this idea of in 1983, we all saw the win. We all saw the Ewoks celebrate. We saw the fireworks coming out of the butts of the A-Wings and yay. And, you know, and now we get to deal. We get a chance to continue the storytelling, which means you wake up the next day and figure it out. And I think that's prevalent in the sequel trilogy a lot. You and I have talked about the legacy that might weigh you down as well as move you forward. New generations dealing with what came before, but the actual, now we're in that time period with characters who, like you said, what do we do now? And who are we? And that could be potentially powerful. And Dave knows how to play with those themes. Dave and his team know how to play with those themes while also keeping connected to that hope over fear kind of theme that should be all throughout all Star Wars.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think final big thing for me is one of the things I've always liked about Sabine's character is the idea of art and culture and kind of this, what are we fighting for? What is the antithesis of the Empire's rigidity and control and, you know, just large, gray, angular, angry objects floating through spaces? It's art, right? It's life. It's, you know, individuality. And Sabine being an artist, it was just, it's one of the kind of biggest explosions of, let's just visually see that, you know? That this is one of the things we're fighting for, this kind of expression. So I'm so excited to just see more of that in live action, in the kind of storytelling you can do with, you know, a lot of her art was sort of for the purpose of not propaganda isn't right, but for the purpose of like, I'm going to tag things with the rebellion spirit, literally, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm going to put, you know, inspirations on my own armor, like, what's her art like now, you know, and how much does her art play a role in finding Ezra even?
Yeah, that's up. Yeah. And maybe I can finally get that answer I've always wanted about her painting that picture of Cad Bane. You know, it's a very important question.
It's huge. Yeah, you heard it here first. Cad Bane is secretly Sabine's father.
That's what it's true. No. Well said. I love it. It's one of the interesting things about her character. And for those who have not taken that deep dive into Rebels, first of all, we always understand we all kinds of Star Wars ways to watch Star Wars and take in Star Wars, but it's worth it. And Sabine's one of the things that I think is really worth it. What that character grows into, that Trials of the Darksaber episode and that kind of whole run is some of the best Star Wars I find for myself. I just love those episodes, what they ask and what they're challenging the characters on, and some great stuff, man. It's some great stuff. So take a look. We'll give you the Force Center list of essential Sabine episodes for you.
Exactly. That Trials of the Darksaber is just phenomenal.
It is indeed. So there you go. Natasha Liu Bordizzo in the Ahsoka cast of Sabine Wren, according to Deadline. Maybe we'll get a confirmation down the line and we can talk about it all again here. All right. That's the news. That's it. We'll see him. Okay. All right. So we're catching up on some news, both good, both confusing, frustrating, all kinds of news, including a little tidbit that came out today. And it's all centered around the woman at the top of the flow charts of the organizations of Disney and Lucasfilm, Kathleen Kennedy. Have you heard of her? She
tweets.
Yeah, seen some tweets and some videos with red eyes. Let's start with what is we feel here at Force Center is generally, I'll let Joseph speak for himself on this, of course, but hey, generally, good news. Kathleen Kennedy is going to be in charge until 2024. Contract got extended. So let's just start simply with this, Joseph. She's had some great success here in a run at Lucasfilm. Absolutely some challenges. We're about to talk about some of that stuff. But what do we think just here on the of this extension right here on the surface?
Yeah, I think it's great. We're going to talk in our next story about some of the ups and downs with the whole movie side of Lucasfilm. But I think Kathleen Kennedy has done a great job. I think that she is has this experience and is a person who there are only a few people who can do this job, not in terms of ability, but in terms of experience, right?
Yeah.
So I think a lot very highly of Kathleen Kennedy. I think it is great that she is staying in charge, because this would be, I think, an awkward time to have a transition.
It absolutely would be. And I think some of it, I think not just Star Wars, but with a lot of stuff coming out, Indiana Jones 5, the Willow series, a lot of like Lucasfilm properties, and pictures are on the way. And I think having her at the top to make sure they get out and get out okay, I think that's tremendously valuable and tremendously important to the future success of Lucasfilm. So makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes
sense. I also think that there's, Bob Chapek is relatively new, right? And we know from things that, watching Bob cons, reading Bob books, Bob Iger has just straight up taken some responsibility for some decisions, right? Like he has just publicly said, I'm the one who insisted Solo come out in May, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Kathleen Kennedy is the head of Lucasfilm, but there might be some wrangling with, Disney, big Disney decisions as well. So I think having Kathleen Kennedy stay at Lucasfilm while Disney is also still finding its feet under a new head honcho.
Yeah.
Is good. Right. I also think that there's every time that this comes up, that the contract's extended or, the rumors or not even rumors, just I think people saying it because they want clicks in some cases that she's out. Right. I mean, it's gotten to be a joke of which random Twitter feed claims that they have the info that Kathleen Kennedy is out. Right. There's always a little bit of a discussion of this blurring between creators versus producers. And obviously there can be overlap. Right.
Yep.
But I think a serious conversation about Kathleen Kennedy is really about, well, who is being prepared to take over, right?
Yeah.
And that is, I think, what would be interesting to me is if there were elevated rumors, as you said, about somebody being ready to take over the mantle. Michelle Rejwan being the senior vice president and having a large amount of experience. I don't think Favreau is interested because I think he's more on the creative side, but it does seem like he has that more. You know what? When I finish this, I'd be happy to stop writing and directing and just be the overall guy. Right. But even he, I think, is a little bit more in the, I want to have my finger in the creative pie, as it were. So I don't know. I think these conversations can be benefited from a little less wild speculation and a little bit more like, look at the actual websites. Who's on the board, right? Whose career is actually being a producer? And are they in the experience? Do they have the resume to possibly take this on?
Yeah, no, it's a fun conversation. I'll put money down on Michelle Rejwan now. Looking at 2024, we'll see. But things can change. People move. I can't imagine Favreau be like, run a studio. I like going to food trucks. What are you talking about?
Yeah, that might not sound fun to him.
And even the felony of it all, I get that, but I think you're looking at someone like Carrie Beck, who's probably got more of the resume that's being built, James Waugh, those kind of folks. But fascinating. Yeah, see, there I'm already distracted, Joe. So I want to talk about 2024, if that's even the end, and probably not.
Definitely might not be the end. 2024 might be when all the movies are really cranking into high gear. And then I think it's also important to remember that we've had a lot of things announced for Disney Plus. We have a lot of things that are actively in production or post-production, but Disney Plus, the TV side of it, really is still in its infancy. So it makes sense to have that continue to be shepherded by Kathleen Kennedy for a while.
That's a great point. We're still Disney Plus is walking around in diapers still.
Yep.
Though the other side of this, we understand there's definitely been some challenges. And guess what? There's always going to be challenges when you're doing big time picture making in the old Hollywood town. That's nothing new. But this story came out. And it was interesting. This came out a little bit earlier in our Force Center recording week. And I tried to go back to find some of it. And I couldn't even, Joseph, find all of the stories that I needed to get to. But let's just go with what we got here. Former Hollywood Reporter editor Matthew Belloni, reported in his newsletter that the previous news that we talked about last week, Rogue Squadron, was going to be delayed due to scheduling conflicts. More to do with creative differences between Jenkins and Lucasfilm Limited. All right. So nothing confirmed, but we're going to talk about that here. This news is also accompanied by reports and rumors and a lot of things going around. This is one of the ones I literally tried finding some of the stories on, and for some reason they weren't popping up. this urban legend called the Rian Johnson trilogy might be off the board as well. As I said, nothing official from Lucasfilm or Disney. Wouldn't expect that. So let's tiptoe through the gossip mill, Joseph. Without a doubt, the film side has battled some perceived director and creative issues. And by perceived, I mean, there have been some. going back to Josh Trank, the Rogue One reshoots, Lord and Miller, Trevorrow, Benioff and Weiss, lest we forget, and this whole Johnson trilogy thing, and now reportedly Jenkins. So let's dive on in, Joseph, to the rumors, this news, and some of it probably maybe even makes sense. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is definitely the possibility that what I would rank as a shadowy rumor.
Yes.
Not necessarily an elevated rumor. Of course, it could be true because, yes, there has been creative differences between Lucasfilm and different creators. Absolutely. Right. I do take this one with a grain of salt. I do think that these rumors come at different levels, jokes aside, from elevated to shadowy. Different sources and different motivations. And then we just see them as clickbait, maybe clickbait isn't fair. We see them shared, right? And a lot of times we don't stop to look exactly who reported this first where, and we just take it as, it's happened, right? This one, I think is, it is believable, certainly, but I do take it with a big grain of salt. This is a former Hollywood Reporter editor.
Yeah.
The place that this news actually comes from is this writer saying that they have sources, but the actual article is titled, "It's Time to Take Star Wars Movies Away from Kathy Kennedy." It is on a, you know, a monetized site, which there's nothing wrong with that. A lot of sites are monetized, called Puck, that I've never heard of before this myself. And I can't even read the full initial newsletter without signing up for a free trial. Right. Which is all of which is to say, you know, I'm not judging this person or this site. But just to remember that sometimes when it's somebody who is reporting rumors from their sources, the reporters have motivations too. And this is an article that isn't just reporting news. This is an op-ed piece. This is an opinion piece titled, "It's Time to Take Star Wars Movies Away from Kathy Kennedy." So I just wanted to highlight that to just kind of remind us to take a step back, because in particular, in that article, it's just a casual side mention that the Rian Johnson trilogy is shelved.
Right.
And that I saw everywhere on social media is the absolute truth. Like, let's track where things come from and make our own assessments about, you know, is there any other motivation to what is being said?
Yeah. And that's kind of been the lay of the land for a few years now. Right. And I agree that not everything, not everyone talking about this, including us, is here to get clicks about it. It's something that's out there. And if you're covering Star Wars or diving into Star Wars, you can talk about it, but some of it absolutely is. Some of it absolutely is that driving point. And then, you know,
sorry, if I can just interject real quick, because I feel bad calling all news clickbait. I think if news is just reported and put it out there, have your action. Great. It's news. It's entertainment news. It's journalism. It's great. I think for me, it is clickbait when it is framed in such a way to specifically cause anger and debate, or maybe to obfuscate part of it in order to get the, you know, strong visceral reaction click, you know, and I think there is a difference there.
Yeah, 100%. And then it's a sliding scale of coverage in a way where he puts this out and there's going to be people who are going to want to talk about this in the way of, aha, see, I've always known she's horrible. And that's where some of my grumpiness starts coming in, where they're not actually analyzing some of it. And look, there's the conversations about her resume are had all the time. And we are on the side of look at the resume, look at what, you know, we believe she deserves to be here. But with the creative and director issues and everything, at the end of the day, Joseph, I just tossing this to you. If you saw Last Jedi and went, I don't like that, you're going to point to all these examples that we talked about of why she doesn't know what she's doing, right? There's a lot of people seem to make that. I didn't like that movie. Therefore, all these things add up to why that was horrible. But if you're like us, we're like, man, Last Jedi really got me, and I moved. I had to think about it, but man, I really love it. I cry six times at Rise of Skywalker. We're going to come from it from that angle too, which I have to admit. I'm pretty happy. It doesn't mean I don't look at some of these things that have gone wrong and go, oh, okay, what's going on there? Doesn't even with the Rogue Squadron. What's going on there? I want to know, but I'm probably going to enjoy whatever they put out because I engage with it differently.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it is great for us to come at it from a perspective of opinion as well. Like, the, you know, this article it's an opinion piece, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And I think it's every possibility that the sources are correct, right?
Yeah.
But just like with us, we're sharing our opinions. And Ken, you are so right. You and I have opinions that are colored by the fact that creatively, no matter how bonkers any of the background or production was for any of the films released by Disney era Lucasfilm, creatively, every single film works for me. I definitely have my little nitpicks and all that. But they work for me. And I think one of the reasons that the films really work for us is that they connect in deep emotional ways. You connected created the great phrase, emotional canon, right? Mm. But if you break down thematic ideas in original trilogy, prequel trilogy, they're there in sequel trilogy. If you ask yourself, who is Han Solo? To us, the Solo film resonates with that. If you ask, what is the idea of hope? Why are we always throwing that word around in Star Wars? Rogue One answers that. So for us, I think we do come at it from the opinion of whatever went on behind the scenes, which sometimes was obviously not great.
Yeah.
The films work for us.
Yeah. 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 And Like I said before, and I remember you've said this on Jedi Council back in the day. I'm a New York Yankee fan. In the 1970s, they won two back-to-back World Series titles and were literally choking each other out in the dugout. Like, a lot of players didn't get along. It was the Bronx Zoo. And I didn't, you know, I'm like, I don't care. The end result is they did what they were supposed to do. They won championships. But if you're a team that historically has those problems and has a bad culture in the clubhouse and you don't win, yeah, you're going to be a fan going, get something right in there. So I understand. We're looking at it two different ways. But I just, you know, these stories pop up this week and immediately, I think I texted or emailed you like, oh, God, I'm just bracing because so many, I just think there's, I'm trying not to use strong words, but I want to say like, there's just so lazy reviewing and criticism of the Star Wars films by you're not engaging with what's there in the movie. So therefore this person clearly doesn't know what she's doing. And that's where I run up against it, where I think all these examples from Trank, you know, back in 20, I was there that day at that panel in Anaheim when he was quote unquote sick. Like that's how long ago it was happened. But some of the Trank stuff, the Rogue One reshoots where, you know, we think it ends, we like where it ends up. We just did that Star Wars ranked on the episodes, Lord Miller, everything. I still come down on the side that Kathy Kennedy, Kathleen. I don't know her personally. I don't want to call her that. Kathleen, we show some respect. Kathleen Kennedy at the Lucasfilm team have a job to protect, believe it or not, people, to protect George's Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of things out here, some of them I don't think are George's Star Wars, that hope, fear versus fear, and all those things we talk about every week here and here. And that, so that's why I think, fine, she's a dark knight to me. You know, she's going to take all the slings and arrows. You can hate her all or one. She's still going to do her job. She's still going to do her job and protect George's Star Wars. That's very much my opinion. But
yeah. Yes, absolutely. Total opinion. I feel like that's what Kathleen Kennedy and the entire creative team at Lucasfilm is doing, is saying, please, please, directors, writers, share your pitches. Come in, bring passion, bring your perspective. But then within that, there's this delicate balance that Filoni has talked about so elegantly, mm-hmm. between Star Wars needing the new, needing to have that fun, wild spirit of like, why not? You know, can there be this kind of music in Star Wars? Sure, try it. But then there are these kind of core things that I do think get down to, this is, Star Wars can have tons of darkness, but it is ultimately about hope, yeah. and family and connection and trying to be the best person you can and make the best choices you can. And all of these, you know, great core ideas that I think they work really hard to preserve. And that is totally my opinion. And yeah. I think obviously that works with a lot of people. You know, people cite that there were some stumbles with Force Awakens or with The Rise of Skywalker. But in the big picture, it seems like J.J. Abrams has worked just fine with the Lucasfilm creative process, ultimately, yeah. right?
Ultimately.
Rian Johnson certainly did. The Last Jedi, lots of people don't like it, but that is the one film where there is no drama at all
yeah.
behind the scenes, right? I know Ron Howard and Henry Gilroy both came into the process late, but they seem to be able to navigate Lucasfilm creative process just fine. Mm. You know, Gilroy jumping into Andor. John Favreau, because this always gets talked about as just the movies, but Kathleen Kennedy produced The Mandalorian too, right?
Yeah.
And with a great, amazing balance of let's try and explore new things, let's do different things, but let's say true to the core of Star Wars. You watch those specials with Favreau, and to me, that's what's needed. It's so clear that he's like, I got all these ideas. I really want to do X. And then the team at Lucasfilm goes, we can do X, but while we're doing X, we have to be mindful of Y. And he's like, cool, great.
Yeah.
You can just like watch it and like hear that discussion of like, I wanted to do this. And then Dave explained to me, but the prequels, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So then I did the thing I wanted to, but slightly different. And actually this new different idea emerged because of it. Fun.
Yeah. I would love to get a little more. You know, hear a little bit more on the putting together the TV side, right? Because it's so smooth, you don't hear, and people just have a tendency to trust the man in the cowboy hat for good reason, I get. But we know it's not just him. We know Favreau is very much in charge. I'd love to study what's working on that side with Kathleen Kennedy all the way down versus the film side, where you're getting these very strong-willed And not that anyone on the TV side's not strong-willed. Yeah, I guarantee you Favreau is. He knows what he wants on his pizza. I think on the other side, Lord Miller at the top of their game. Trevorrow, for whatever that was, on top of the game. Benioff and Weiss, you know I love my Game of Thrones, but they're at the, coming into it. That deal was signed 3-4 years before the end of the show. But then things start happening along the way, and hey, guess what I'd like to do? I'd like to do this thing called Necessary Rage. Mm-mm. And that's where I'd love to analyze that. The details, we're never going to get them, of why that stuff doesn't work. And again, it's naturally going to fall on her shoulders. But I think they're doing the Lord's work over there, not Lord Miller's work. Lord's work. Protecting.
A controversial and great joke you just made.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. It's easy to go, look, they produced that animated movie I really love, and this around the same time they got fired from Lucasfilm. It does not mean it was working over there. You just don't know, and we don't know all the details, but you just don't know. You just don't know.
Yeah, I will. You know, unless there is a great in-depth documentary someday with multiple perspectives, we'll never know exactly what happened there. I love mm-hmm. Into the Spider-Verse, and it's a great film, amazing film. But I also, if it is true that Lord and Miller were making a more of a comic take, I personally wouldn't have wanted that. I think you said something really important. And I think we're both on the same page, correct me if I'm wrong, that while we are celebrating the films in Kathleen Kennedy, we also want to admit that the drama behind the films is undeniable, right?
Undeniable.
It is okay for two things to be true, that you and I believe that Kathleen Kennedy has done a good job in the films that just exist are great.
Yeah.
Also undeniable that there's been a huge amount of shakeup behind the scenes mm-hmm. and it is not great for Star Wars ultimately.
Oh yeah. And I hate these kind of stories. I want Rogue Squadron to come out and win an Oscar. Like, you know what I mean? Like when that started popping around and it's going to add fuel for the fire, but there is some stuff going on there. I totally get it. Yeah. And that's, you know, wait till y'all hear the stories that are actually out there, you know, like, yes, it could be a bit of a war zone, but that's kind of what, that high stress, high, big money, creative, projects. That's kind of what happens there. Unless, you know, you quietly make Last Jedi, no problems at all until the film comes out, you know, and, you know, even Force Awakens, Michael Arndt in the early days that changed. And, you know, other than that, it was, you know, Harrison Ford's, you know, ankle breaks or something. Other than that, you don't hear a lot of that. And then it just becomes fuel for the fire. The Rogue One reshoots are such a punchline for a reason, because it's like, you just keep pointing to this thing that then all these stories keep pointing to these things that, at the end of the day did not distract from the end result of the movie for a lot of people, a lot more than online cares to admit, but it doesn't mean it hit for everybody. This I get.
Yeah.
And that's why at the end of the day, that's why it's a story. Either you're happy with the results and you don't care if they're fighting in the dugout, or you want some championships and you're concerned. I get it. And that's the end of the day, what it's going to be.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that from the perspective of history, right? Right now there is a 10-year-old watching the sequel trilogy on their iPad and they have no idea of the drama. And that is only going to continue as time goes on. But I get that in the moment now, it is really challenging. You know, when Star Wars is going to come back to the big screen, right? You don't want this stumble with Rogue Squadron, whatever's going on here. I do want to really make sure that I highlight, I think you said a really important thing about maybe a part of the difficult process on the film side is the directors who are already really have some weight behind them, having had huge genre successes, right?
Yeah.
Because Lucasfilm isn't alone in this. This has happened with MCU, just not as much frequency. Yes. But what appears to be the exact same thing, right? I mean, Edgar Wright's personally on every interview I've ever seen him, he seems like an absolutely awesome guy. I love his films. And he's just like real straightforward about like, yeah, no, they got a process at Marvel that really intensified since I started developing Ant-Man, and they want it to fit in the way that they do things. And it wasn't for me, so I left.
Yeah.
Right. Relatively recently in the grand scheme of things, Scott Derrickson left Doctor Strange 2. And that was, from everything I understand, creative differences. So it has happened with Marvel. Mm-hmm. But the other thing I was thinking about and just looked at, Ken, is Marvel has given a lot of directors who have had already had some success as directors, maybe just a couple films, or maybe had a couple films like 10 years ago, but haven't made a film in a while. They've given a lot of directors their first shot at a big budget genre IP story.
Right.
The Russo brothers, you know, they went from some episodes of Community and some romantic comedies in the mid 2000s to the largest films ever made. James Gunn, extremely experienced filmmaker, but smaller, quirkier, like horror.
Yeah.
Big, big boost up into the genre, big budget world. Similar thing with John Watts, the directors of Captain Marvel, Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck. A lot of these people are they're experienced, but it's this step up into the big genre IP world.
Yep.
Whereas it seems like the Lucasfilm tactic was, have you already had a big genre IP hit or even made a big genre movie? Well, then come on over, right? I mean, Lord and Miller, Trevorrow with Jurassic World, Benioff and Weiss with that little Game of Thrones indie, right? Patty Jenkins coming off the just phenomenal success of Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that is a little bit of the disconnect of some of these creators who are at the top of their game have already proved themselves in big budget genre IP, coming in and going, I don't want to, you know, be told where the edges of the sandbox are.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to do things my way. Whereas if you're like, you're an established creative, talented director, but this is the first time you're being invited into the sandbox, maybe you're a little bit more like, cool, no problem. I'm just happy to be in the sandbox.
Yeah, look, I think it's true. Patty Jenkins, Wonder Woman, Michelle McLaren was supposed to direct that. Game of Thrones director. Like, she was left that project. Creative differences. They bring in Patty Jenkins. And I don't know if you all have heard, but any other kind of directors with some resumes, when they're asked about superhero movies, not fans.
And they're asked constantly.
Constantly. They never stop getting asked. Yeah, so Martin Scorsese, Captain America, not going to happen, because he doesn't want to take, and shouldn't have to take any notes that he doesn't want to take, because he's done his thing. I get it. And I don't fault any of them, but I it's not just a case of, hey, let's take an up and comer and give them the opportunity of a lifetime. And then they have to say yes. It's not just that simple, but it is. Feige's, you can't tell me Feige doesn't have a strong personality, knows what he wants to put in his films. You can't tell me that.
No. And I think more of this stuff is going to emerge of saying, I really don't want to paint it as, you know, if you get them young, you can break them. I think it's like,
yeah, I don't think you were, but no,
I think it's just total honesty of like, hey, would you like to come in and play? These are the rules.
Yeah.
Because it's a different kind of storytelling, because it's a large established universe. Right. And I think finding the directors who are like, I totally get that, and I'm great with that, I can find a way to make it personal to me, and I can still really say that I understand my story impacts other stories, and you know what I'm saying thematically does need to match some core important philosophy. Like, if you can say to people, to directors in particular, this is what's being offered. You know, a collaboration is being offered.
Yeah.
And get people on board in that perspective, then I think that's what really needs to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know. Yeah. And it's, here's the thing about Star Wars, and not saying MCU is its own beast, and you're pulling things from 75 years of comics, 75 years or more. And the themes are pretty easy to, not easy, but let me rephrase that. The themes are there, but Star Wars, the last 5 years, it's really, for me, my eyes have been open on people I know, people I love, people I respect, who just like, they watch Return of the Jedi and they got something entirely different out of it, which is fine. But what they got out of it would not make a good Star Wars story if they got the opportunity, just quite frankly. Just discussions we've had a lot in the last few years. I'm not saying we're right, they're wrong. Again, it's what you take it. But Luke threw down his lightsaber. Big theme, big thing George was telling you. And to come back in 2017 and go, why didn't he take that lightsaber and just chopping people in half? That's fine to engage with on that level. But I think, you know, taking that type of interpretation of it and trying to make a story with it is part of the problem too. Maybe just me.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I think it is definitely worth thinking about of like, I would absolutely love to see a Star Wars horror film. I would love it to be as scary as it can be for PG-13. I would like it to go into the darkest recesses of people's minds. I don't want a Star Wars horror film that is about nihilism. I don't want it to end with and nobody escaped or they escaped, but, you know, they're going to die tomorrow. Like it is about the worldview, right? It is about saying, you know, Star Wars does a ton of dark things, almost hilariously dark for the contrast of what it is, right?
Yeah.
To go from Anakin saying yippee, and then two films later he is igniting his blade in front of a child who looks, as you've pointed out, a great deal like that young. Like there's darkness in Star Wars. It's not like Star Wars is afraid to go hard. Mm-hmm. It's where does it end up?
Yeah.
It always ends on a beat of hope, and I think I do wonder if sometimes just that kind of basic tonal. This is Star Wars is this odd beast that's part adventure serial that some people find corny, part like a deep mythic, you know, storytelling about who we want to be and who we should be. It's got a political angle that's absolutely baked into the DNA, but that gets problematic for some people. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, it's hopeful. It's hopeful. It's hopeful. Like I can see how that sometimes. It would be hard to for every creator to find their vision and fit within all those things.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, there you go. Kathleen Kennedy goes to the office every day with all that honor.
Exactly. And then imagine just this will be my last thing of like, yeah. I am not again. I fully acknowledge that there's been a lot of behind the scenes damaging, a lot of behind the scenes drama, and it is not great for Star Wars. But at the end of the day, can you imagine having made this much money as Kathleen Kennedy has on these films and also endured the level of criticism?
It's a, you know, I'm surprised I would not extend my contract. So she's stronger than me by far.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. I know that there's been drama and I am not downplaying that. But also at the same time, like when you see those Twitter exchanges, they're like, yeah, Rise of Skywalker bombed. And then somebody like, it made $1 billion. And then another person replies, barely.
Yeah.
Ken, wouldn't you feel like a fool if you made $1 billion, but it was just barely?
Just barely. Yes, absolutely. If all my crypto finally hit, I'd be barely a billionaire. Yes, absolutely. Oh, so there you go. You know, sorry if I'm ranting at all to anyone out there. Yeah, we'll get tweets and everything, but it's like, it's all complicated. And again, at the end of the day, what's on screen? What's there for you? How do you engage with it? What do you take from it? That's kind of all that matters. Both ways, both sides of it, both sides.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we have fun talking about the behind the scenes because it is a part of it. And we have opinions that we're being very honest, our opinions. But I think that is my biggest opinion, Ken, is at the end of the day, you know, nobody sits down to watch Casablanca for the very first time and go, let me read the Wikipedia page first and find out there were how many writers? This movie can't be good. They just watched Casablanca.
Let me find out. They didn't know the end of the script when they started shooting. What are you talking about? This movie's horrible. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just ultimately not how films live in history.
Final note, this thing came out today. We're going to discuss it more when it actually, the issue is actually released. Empire Magazine is going to do a Book of Boba Fett magazine kind of cover story and all that kind of stuff, behind the scenes look, and also touching on a little bit of Kenobi stuff. And Kathleen Kennedy's got a quote that's kind of going around in there. A couple quotes, things about the emotional reunion of Ewan McGregor and Hayden Christensen on the set of Kenobi. And things about maybe what they might be wearing. We're going to talk about that when it's time. But there was this one thing about, you know, that she says, Kathleen Kennedy, they're not even done with the sequel trilogy characters that people love so much. So that's going to be a part of the news cycle there. These failed, horrible, barely $1 billion movies, the characters.
Yeah, I'm very excited to discuss that in its entirety when we see if there's anything more to the quote.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's get some context. All right. All right. I swear that's it. That's the news. I mean, there's some other things out there, some video game news, Dark Horse Dark Horse gets the comic rights again. Marvel and Dark Horse going forward. IDW is going to be phased out. All those kind of things. We understand there's a lot going on. These are the stories we chose to take a deeper dive into right now. Your questions are all coming up here. But before we do that, Joseph, what is our Four Center Recommends? An audiobook we think everyone out there should try on us.
We're recommending Light of the Jedi by Charles Soule. If you haven't had a chance to dive into the High Republic and want to see what it's all about, it is a great place to start since it's the first book and we think a great one, right, Ken?
It is, and download that today or any book you want to try by going to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audio book. All right, we are going to take a quick break. A long first segment because we knew we were going to have a lot of things to get to. But on the other side of this, your questions here on Force Center.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to Force Center, episode 377, the Superstar Destroyer of our fleet. Thank you all for joining us. Joseph, as always, we got some wonderful questions from our listeners. What do we got?
Yeah, we got two questions from Twitter and two questions from our patrons on Patreon. As always, we go first to Twitter. We have a question from Some Moof Milker. That's their actual handle, not anything disparaging, I'm saying. Hello, Some Moof Milker. Here is the thought slash question. I'm beyond thrilled for Kenobi. Been thinking about Vader's role and wondering if you think they should bring back James Earl Jones to voice him. I know it's blasphemy, but for me, his voice in Rogue One was noticeably different. So let's dive into that, Ken. What do you think? James Earl Jones could not possibly be more famous as the voice of Darth Vader, and for a long time there, the bumper on CNN, as well as many, many other acting credits. Amazing. Titan of the industry. Titan of Star Wars. But he is also 90 years old. So where do you go with this kind of difficult question?
I think it might be time. And look, if there was a way you could bring him in and combine him with another voice, and there's been some wonderful Vader voices out there. You can look up the names. I look at the late Peter Mayhew and that transition that happened around the time of, Last Jedi. It's part of the journey of Star Wars, and part of what we have to deal with is we're still here and more stories are coming. And he's still going. And I'd love to see some interviews with James Earl Jones saying, oh, they brought me back. He's such a joy and a delight and a titan indeed. But I think it's a great question. I've seen this come up a little bit recently as we race towards this return in Kenobi. I do think it's time. The voice was a little different, not distracting enough for me. I still loved it, but that was my James Earl Jones nostalgia pop, was Rogue One. I'm ready to maybe explore going forward.
Yeah, I think for me, I totally agree with you that it's really sad. My knee-jerk reaction is like, of course, James Earl Jones should right. be Vader yeah. as long as he possibly can. But, you know, to quote Yoda, you know, that is the way of things. That is the way of the Force. This has been a journey we've been on of, you know, real life reflecting that Star Wars story of generations and the old giving way to the new, which is, you know, just the nature of life, as well as a big thematic point of Star Wars. But we've seen that from everything from Lucas deciding
yeah.
to say it's time for another generation of storytellers. I'm going to take a step back. I'm going to take a step even farther back to the great sadness of Peter Mayhew. Ben Burtt, alive and kicking, playing horns on documentaries for Disney Plus. But for whatever reason, he has stepped back in Matthew Wood is the new Ben Burtt, right?
Yeah.
They're kind of endless examples of the inevitable generational change. And as much as I would love to hear James Earl Jones in Kenobi, I would also be okay with it if there was an acknowledgement that the generation, the time had come. You know, yeah. It's going to be sad whenever it is, a major, you know, on-screen Vader thing that is not James Earl Jones, right? I had looked this up as well because I was like, I think this is the right name. Scott Lawrence has been Vader in video games since 1995. And I thought he was so great in Fallen Order. In Jedi Fallen Order. So there is a part of me that's just like, it is so sad. I think this is a sad but valid question.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly just because I wish actual reality was different.
Yeah.
Why don't we all just live forever? And then we could, get too much space here. We move to the old folks moon.
Love it. Love it.
But yeah.
Yep, I'm with you. And Scott Lawrence said, you're right, great name to call it. Been just wonderful many, many times over as Vader.
Yeah, yeah. Any other thoughts on James Earl Jones in Kenobi?
No, other than he's a big part of our lives, isn't he? And this will be hard regardless.
Even if he does
do the voice and it doesn't sound the same, that's another conversation to have, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So we shall see. Moving on to another question from Gareth Vader. Gareth says, I just read Star Wars from a certain point of view. So Star Wars. So this is the A New Hope one that Gareth is talking about. And it says the story there is. Oh, maybe I'm wrong. Anyway, the story There Is Another features a piece of pottery that was given to Yoda by Obi-Wan. It felt to me that this was given post-Revenge of the Sith. Do you think Kenobi visited Dagobah or Yoda when in exile? This is from A New Hope, right? This is the one where Yoda is reflecting on how he'd like to train Leia. apologies for the distraction. Let me get back to the question, Ken. Do you think Kenobi visited Dagobah or Yoda when in exile? Do you think he made a special trip to Dagobah to give Yoda some pottery?
It's you want to know what's even funnier? I first looked at this outline on my phone, and I thought it said poetry. And I was like, I don't remember Kenobi giving him like a haiku. Did he? I didn't. And then I didn't get a chance to go back to the story. But yes, pottery, which factors into the story. And there's also, I think, the robe from Qui-Gon is.
Yep. It's his blankie.
It did. It is. By the way, that's just I love that story. And I think you did as well. And we love it here. So anyways, Gareth Vader, this is great. I could see it. Yoda even potentially reappearing in some way with Kenobi in the series is a question that I think we all should have been discussing a little bit more. Definitely not predicting that it's going to happen. I think I grew up thinking they just didn't contact each other, but I just can't imagine that. It's hard for me now to accept that there was not some kind of, hey, how you doing? A Christmas Life Day postcard, you know, I sent you this pottery thinking of you. Or that there was some kind of reconnect over maybe an issue, maybe there's something going on, and maybe Bail picks both of them up for a joyride. I don't know. I'm making jokes, but I could see there'd be some kind of serious reason for them to connect again.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've always taken the end of Revenge of the Sith of like, you know, teach you how to commune with Qui-Gon, I will.
Mm-hmm.
That they are in communication over the old force.
Yeah.
Not that they, I'm not here saying Kenobi and Yoda are a dyad and they can just pass pottery back and forth through the force or poetry. do not rage against the dying of the light, I guess Kenobi would write for Yoda. But that idea that with deep, deep meditation that they can, you know, communicate. And I think that's kind of implied in some of these stories as well. And then I think certainly once Obi-Wan has become one with the Force, I think there's certainly some chit-chats happening there. But in terms of this idea that could Kenobi have visited Dagobah, that's really exciting and interesting to me. In going to through the cave as a trail, the tree cave, Kenobi in that tree cave, mind-blowing, great. And I am really open to that, you know, because I think I did grow up with the idea of, Kenobi delivers Luke and then he's just got a lot of time to pace. But I do like that the Kenobi television show, and I know that some people are still not sure about this, ripping that open a little bit and saying, it's not like he was, you know, gone every weekend, but there was some restlessness there, you know? The idea that maybe not even a part of this show, that he at some point did visit Yoda on Dagobah as a part of his training, and going through that cave, is a trial, is so cool. So I kind of love the idea that Gareth Vader is pitching. I don't think we'll see it, you know? There's something about it that feels it may be a quick flashback. That feels a little, I don't know, maybe overstuffed.
Yeah. Overstuffed's that's a great way to look at it. It almost, I think it hasn't been part of the conversation because I think we might feel we're getting enough with Vader and what's going on there. But I think it's interesting because a lot of people aren't excited or thrilled or don't see the potential and the possibilities around Kenobi Vader one more time, right? This rematch. A lot of people have some strong opinions about that online. Shocker. And I understand. I really do. Because again, I think we are part of that generation that just grew up thinking they didn't meet till New Hope. I'm talking about Vader and Kenobi.
Yeah.
But then I think there's a, why not explore and consider? I'd like those Star Wars fans or potential viewers of Kenobi, just, hey, here, consider some options, especially thematically, that we kind of champion here at Force Center for Vader and Kenobi having one rematch here before New Hope. Or maybe they fight three times in the series. I don't know. But on the flip side, I'm almost saying that to myself about Yoda and Kenobi, because I do kind of have a walls go up and go, no, they didn't meet at all. But why wouldn't I be open to the possibilities of what that could mean for those two characters, especially Kenobi during that part of his life?
Yeah. And I think that's been the tradition of Star Wars. I mean, going to, you know, Lucas having this image in his mind of Padme's, you know, giving birth and passing away, being at the same moment that Vader is, you know, Anakin is turned into Vader, right? Yeah. And he didn't stop himself and go like, but it did make it sound like she died several years after Leia was, when Leia was like one or two.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, there's always been some room for interpretation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In Star Wars. And I know some people don't like that, but other people are like, let's go back to George Lucas's Star Wars. That is George Lucas's Star Wars. Yeah, this is such a great, great question. And even mm-hmm. if this was not in the Kenobi show, I would be happy to see it in, you know, a book or a short story.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and I think these from a certain point of view stories are canon light, right? They're canon adjacent. Yeah. That's the way it is until there's a reason to question, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
I think it's a great canon question. Like, when did he get the pottery?
Well,
go ahead.
No, I said, there you go. That's the point where it's pottery now until someone goes, but hold on. What if it's poetry?
What if it's poetry? It changes, right? Yeah. So either if I love this sentence, if the pottery is canon, then either Kenobi visited, or I like the other option that, you know, Bail rescues Yoda. And Yoda's like, failed, I have. Into exile, I must go. First, let's swing by the Jedi Temple one more time to pick up a few things.
Yeah, I like that.
Which is also an exciting Disney Plus show. Yoda raids his own closet before going into exile. All right, we're going to move on to our questions from our patrons on Patreon. First one comes from Douglas Dubois. Douglas says, since we are in the dark times of Star Wars gaming with only the Lego saga in sight, I've had a lot of time to think about and chat with friends about what our dream Star Wars games would be. A popular choice is a Red Dead Redemption 2 style game where you can roam the galaxy, making a living and making your own choices to follow the light or take the seductive path to fast riches. Thread in a storyline that gives you more to potentially care about than yourself, and I'm sold. What would be an instant buy for you and likely to take up too many of your waking hours?
Well, first,
where do you go with this, Ken?
Yeah, it's going to compete against Red Dead Redemption 2, which I'm still playing because I'm in the online mode. In fact, after we record Force Center, I always sit down and let myself catch my breath for a half hour, usually playing games. So I've got to go raid a abandoned military fort to clear out some outlaws, Joseph. I have a big thing planned today.
After you get done podcasting, you just got to go in the mountains and fight a bear, huh?
Yeah. So I go make a snack and I sit down, and then before I even put the episodes together, I play for a little bit. So yeah, Douglas, you speak my language here, and I know a lot of people have been calling for this, you know, a big kind of open world kind of Star Wars thing, but I think beyond that, there's a great appeal to that. I think it's difficult to do in Star Wars. You got a galaxy. You're not just on this, Old West setting or whatever Red Dead it might be or any other game. Mass Effect does a great job of, hey, you got planets to travel. And I think it can be done. Let's just assume it can be done. But I think what Douglas is talking about here, Joseph, is what would really make it appealing is these choices. The honor system, which is present in so many games, has a lot more power in Star Wars. It's a lot more what it's about, right? So give me that. And I don't necessarily think I'd want it to be a Jedi or even a bounty hunter. Give me a Han Solo type, meaning someone who's like, wouldn't it be cool if I robbed that coaxium train, or wouldn't it be cool if I helped somebody? That's the choice I think it'd be fun to play around with.
Yeah, no, I like that. That'd be great. Yeah, just a scoundrel, huh?
Yeah.
Or a potential scoundrel, just trying to make your way in the universe.
Yeah, yeah. It's, you know, it's a Star Wars trope, but I think that just going around, making your way up, making your way in the world today takes everything you got. That's my point.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely great. You know, I haven't played a ton of Knights of the Old Republic. I'm working through it on my old iPad there, and yeah, the choice to, do the work of the light side or give in to the dark that's really fun in video games. It's a proud tradition in Star Wars games. So I would love to see more games like that. I think for me, I'm excited for almost any Star Wars game, but my honest, just knee-jerk reaction, whether it's not particularly realistic, but I would love to just be Din Djarin pre the child, and I would love to just be taking bounties and interacting with weirdos. And, you know, there is this push, I think, in Star Wars video games to, you know, introduce canon stories, introduce canon characters, and it's, you know, that has been really rewarding. But there's a part of me and that's great in Fallen Order, but there's a part of me that also is like, I would also just be happy to play a video game as Mando and, you know, do some missions. And I don't care whether they're canon, you know, like, cause there's a part of me is like, oh, you could tell a canon story and it could be like, you know, how did he hook up with the armorer, right? When did, you know, when did he find that, that group, or was he always with them? Or is this a story of how he gets armor for one of the kids there? Like, you know, I kind of think that those Mandalorian stories aren't happening because Favreau wants a elbow room and doesn't want, that's just total conjecture. I got nothing for that other than my own imagination. But I would still just, there's something to, that's to me, it is a thing that some people critique, but I find it so appealing in the Mandalorian television show where he just shows up. He's like, well, I want a fruit. Like, okay.
Yeah.
But first you have to get 50 vegetables. Like, all right, I'll get 50 vegetables so I can get one fruit. It's such video game storytelling. And it just makes me want to hit the buttons and do it myself.
It'd be fun. And just the mere act of going to a space cantina to get a drink is problematic. I just got a big fist fight in the Valentin bar in Red Dead. I just wanted a whiskey and I bumped someone. Next thing I know, it's a shootout with eight people. So it happens.
Yeah. And then in the other utter fantasy that I don't think it is the right time for this in Star Wars, but I would love I don't even need to roam around a big world. I'd be happy with a single player, pretty linear, maybe 12 missions. You do this, then that mission ends. Then you play this. I know I'm yelling at video game clouds here. I would love just a pretty linear single player story with Luke Skywalker and young Ben Solo on a mission. And it's, you know, you get to play them both and trades back and forth.
I like that.
That is not a prediction or doesn't match, I think, the modern market, but that's my honest answer for what would I like to sit down and play.
That's great. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Excellent. Any other video game thoughts, or should we wrap up so you can fight a bear?
Yeah. Well, I run from bears. You know, the danger is there's a city called Valentin, and a lot of people know it, and they have almonds on the bar top there. I went to get some almonds and I accidentally push this guy, and you know, fight started. It's the danger. I just want to eat.
I could never master the fist fight mechanics in the first Red Dead Redemption, and I so enjoyed playing that. And I can't even remember what metal or ding I was trying to get, whatever, just serotonin boost or whatever the hell it is. But I got my ass handed to me in so many bars because I just would walk up to people and like, I'm trying to get a medal. Can we fight?
That's the best.
Didn't go well.
There you go.
Anyway, on to our final question. This comes to us from Commander Cloud. Commander says, hey there, fellas. If you could share one Earth experience with any Star Wars character, what would it be and with who? Take Rey to a water park? Show Maul some yoga moves? Give Bail Organa a genuine dirty water hot dog? On the flip side of this cultural exchange, what would you bring back from Star Wars to give to humanity on Earth? Thanks again. Thank you, Commander, for the really fun question. Ken, what would you do in our real world with a Star Wars character?
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways to look at it there, right? There could be the silly things. Some of them are serious. I might want to introduce Padme to some nice, calm gentlemen. So hang out. I don't know. There's that. I definitely, is it, I don't know. Is it, we're so obsessed with Kenobi drinking, but I would like to take him to the smokehouse.
We're far too in sync. Very first answer is go to the Musso and Frank bar with Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Well, you could take him to Musso's and I'll take him to smokehouse. We'll both be there. It'll be good. It'll be good.
Yeah. I think I go to that one just because I love this peek into Obi-Wan's character that I think he spends times in diners and bars just chatting to locals. And he would rather be doing that than be flying, you know, a ship and fighting wars. So if I could give Obi-Wan Kenobi a great martini at either Musso and Frank or Smokehouse and hear his thoughts, that'd be great.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I'd like to, you know, if I'm doing this, given Earth experience, I want to, some of the less fortunate characters, I'd like to maybe take Kitster to Disneyland. You know, young Kitster, not current day Kitster, but, you know, you deserve some joy in your life, man.
Yeah.
You know?
Very wizard. Very wizard.
And then he would get to Batuu, and he's like, this is too close to home.
Yep. This isn't what a shack really tastes like.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty great. I would, my other two answers besides Obi-Wan, you are very kind to think of who is downtrodden, needs to be lifted up. But I think I mentioned last week, I went to a Target and there was a Grogu in almost every section, you know, from forks to towels. They just, the holiday seasons are coming in and Grogu's still selling things.
Yeah,
I just got the picture of walking through Target carrying a basket with Grogu in it and watching Grogu see himself again and again and again and wondering how he'd react to the cock of his head. And what is that? Why am I on a sock? You know, did he try to eat the socks with himself on them?
Yeah. Yeah.
Beautiful.
I was also going to say maybe you take Grogu to like the IKEA daycare center they have in the bottom floor there and just like chaos ensue.
Oh, he would be, you know, an IKEA family member sucking down meatballs real quick.
Yeah, 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 absolutely.
Do you have any more?
No, not in terms of that. There's a lot of different, you know, take Jar Jar out to a nice meal too, a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I could take him down to the beach and get him some fish tacos.
Right, right.
I think my final one, and we've both talked about this before, it wouldn't be an open mic, but like a stand-up show that that maybe some friends are running. I would take Leia Organa to a stand-up show and see if I can get her a spot.
Ooh, that'd be great. She'd do well. Oh, yeah.
She would do so well. Yeah. So, okay, the other part of Commander Cloud's question is, what would we take from Star Wars back to humanity on Earth? I'm so curious if we have the same answer on this one. Well, what did you get?
I mean, outside of just technology, right? A lightsaber and all that kind of stuff. I would like to take, it's not quite cultural exchange, but I would take like Luke's land speeder. Cause I think I could get around faster.
Oh yeah.
And you know,
absolutely.
Yeah. My Mustang that I have right now, my 20-year-old beat up Mustang that was a replacement for the car I lost, does have a top that comes down and I got to do it once before it broke. So like to maybe experience that again, put 3PO on the back seat. Like he was for, he drives it for a little bit, but then he sits on the back seat. Like he's at a parade, like a Rose parade. That'd be fun getting around LA like that.
Oh yeah. I think you'd get a lot of great looks, a lot of great honks, positive honks.
Yeah.
I think this is because I had a headache this morning before we recorded, Ken, but Bacta.
Yeah.
Bacta and lots of it. I want to bathe in healing goo and I want other people to be able to do that too.
You know, who knows? We might get there soon enough. Some of those liquid band-aids almost seem like Bacta. So that'd be good.
Yeah. Great question, Commander Cloud. Great question to everyone. Douglas, Gareth, and some Moof Milker, thank you all very much for the great Star Wars thought starters. Those are our questions, Ken.
Love it. Yeah, especially give Bail Organa a genuine dirty water hot dog is something I did not know I needed Star Wars. So great stuff today, everybody. All right. Hey, we are the Force Center Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. You can like our Facebook page, Force Center Podcast. We're also on Instagram and YouTube. Podcast is available on Anchor, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Amazon Music, Spotify, and more. Merch is available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. You can follow me at Cadnapsock. Go to my website, cadnapsock.com, for information on upcoming comedy shows like Four Nights in Washington, D.C. in December. Get tickets there. Mark Ellis and I are going to be at the Comedy Loft. And also got a charity spotlight on there. You can find many things that might interest you to plug yourself into to pay attention to the world outside your own walls, which is something I try to remind myself to do every day. Joseph, what about you?
Yeah, you can find me Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out all of my other comedy adventures on my website, josephscrimshaw.com. In particular, if you're a Marvel fan, the most recent episode of my other podcast, Obsessed, is my wife Sarah and I discussing The Eternals. We really enjoyed it, thought it was really fun and different and intriguing about the future of the MCU. So if you're interested, again, you can check that out, as well as all of my other comedy adventures on my website, josephscrimshaw.com.
Check it out, my friends. All right, we're out of here for today. So for all the executives making all the big decisions in Hollywood, for Sabine Wren and a good old genuine dirty water hot dog, we'll see you next time here on Force.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.